to the Culture Chat hosted by WorkExo. Our mission is to upgrade work. Find out more about our Workplace Genome Project at workexo.com. And now, over to our host for today. Hello, this is Maddie Grant, founding partner at WorkExo, jumping in to share with you this webinar excerpt from a great series hosted by our partner QuestionPro. There are three of these in the series. Please see the podcast link for a full description of this webinar.
QuestionPro for inviting us. We've enjoyed kind of pursuing this journey of culture in partnership with you and look forward to more of that. And glad that many of you have joined us to think about how culture affects how we recruit and essentially how we attract the best people for our business. So I want to start with just a couple of observations. As Karen said, I spent a number of decades as an HR professional on both the recruiting and the talent management side. Certainly have my firsthand experiences in the realm and certainly the challenges of finding the best people today. Jamie's got some great experience as well, and as Karen mentioned, we'll bring kind of another perspective to this. But one thing that's, I think, important for us to start with is the notion that although this webinar is entitled The Secret to Recruiting the Best Talent, I don't know that there is necessarily any one secret. There certainly are lots of things that need to fall into place in order to make sure we're getting the best people for our business. But I think we're going to try to talk about one that is either oft underused or maybe not even identified with yet. I think we're seeing a lot more attention to it, but we hope it's a concept that will resonate with you and one that you can find a way to practice in your own places of work. And that has everything to really do with authenticity and how we present ourselves to the outside world. I feel like I spent a lot of my time when I was in the realm of as an HR professional, unsuccessfully, quite frankly, convincing the organization that I was trying to represent to our candidate base that we have more to gain from talking about who we really are than we do from trying to pretend we are someone else or trying to present ourselves as someone who we want to be, but maybe are not. And so authenticity has a lot to do with understanding who we are first and getting comfortable with how we talk about that and then using it to leverage our conversations and attracting the right people in the business. And so that's kind of what we're going to focus on today. I am going to ask that Jamie, you know, you pop in from time to time if there's something that I'm missing, and I'll do the same when I hand the podium over to you. But let's start with this observation. Let's start with this observation. So CareerBuilder did this analysis last year. I think they actually do it every year. And of all the things that they uncovered, this one really stood out for me. That today job seekers are really taking their time to understand what's going on in these organizations that they're pursuing. This whole idea of the consumer that job seekers are increasingly acting as the consumers of products or services are acting, and they're consulting resources that obviously have not always been available to them, but now are at their fingertips. This kind of says a couple of things to me as we start to lead into this discussion of authenticity. One, I think the workforce, for a variety of reasons, but the workforce is maybe more interested in understanding what it's going to be like to work at that place, what the experience is going to really be like, what they're going to kind of touch, feel, taste, smell, the context that comes with it, then maybe they are worried about what the job entails. They're not as concerned about job descriptions anymore. They're concerned about what's the experience? How is it going to feel to be with this organization? And they now have data available to them that maybe they didn't before. The other thing this says is that if this is what they're looking for, if they want that kind of context, then we probably need to get better at giving it to them. Now, the fact that they're checking out 18 different sources could say a number of things. It could say that they're thorough, or it could say that they're not getting what they want from the 18 sources that they have at their fingertips. And so, the war for talent, pardon the cliche, is a war that we know is won in inches. Again, pardon the cliche, but it's true. And so every incremental effort or advantage that we can take is obviously in our exponential benefit, and this maybe is one of them. Can we get better at sharing information about who we really are so that the candidates we're trying to attract are going to, in fact, gravitate to us? And that's kind of the question that we'll pose to you today. I bought a trampoline last week against my better judgment. That's another discussion. We won't deal with that. For my kids. And like any consumer today, I spent a ton of time researching it. I mean, I could go to Amazon. I could go to any website that sells these products and learn all that I could. And I could learn it from people who had actually experienced that product, who had either purchased it and taken it back or purchased it and still have it. But I got that context from them, and I got to do a lot of it. It's getting easier to do that in the world of work, but it's still hard to find kind of that true context, the authentic context around what one is really going to get. Yet the relationship or the analogy remains completely valid. I can take this trampoline back if it doesn't work, if what I researched doesn't represent what I thought I was buying, if the product itself does not represent what I thought I was buying, I can take it back. Your employees and your new hires can do exactly the same thing. It may take them longer. In fact, it usually does take them longer. But as soon as they figure out that it's not what they bargained for, they're as good as gone. And their getting there is going to have a drag on lots of things in your business. We know this intuitively, but what do we do to make sure that they're making the best decision, the best buying decision? Yes, they are purchasing your business in a way. What do we make sure that they're doing, that we're giving them every piece of information they need to make good decisions about whether or not this is the right place for them, whether this is the right product for them? Glossy brochures are a thing of the past. Contrived career pages are a thing of the past. We now have the glass doors of the world, which we could spend an entire web conference talking about. I would still argue it's hard to get really meaningful information from that place, but it's better than what we had before, and people are consulting it. What do we do that's more meaty, that's more meaningful, that actually is going to have an impact on people that are listening to it and paying attention, as we just saw? Here's the one hurdle that we all have to kind of get over before we can even start to take this notion of authenticity, being more open and transparent about who we really are, seriously. We got to get comfortable with people sitting across the table from us and saying, you know what, I don't really like what I'm hearing right now. I'd rather they make that decision while I'm having that conversation with them than again after they've been with us for 30 days. If they don't like what they see, they aren't the right talent, aka the best talent. The best talent for you are the people that are actually going to fit within the environment and the culture, the values, beliefs, behaviors, the actions, all the stuff that you offer, and all of the things that are going to help them thrive. And if they can't find those things that are going to be important to them, maybe not to everybody, but to them, then again, they are not the best talent. We need to get better about talking about what it's really like to be there. And that's not about good or bad. That's not about best place to work. That's just about what is. It's about understanding first who we really are. Because without that understanding, we cannot talk about it in any sort of productive way. It goes to the age-old question, and I use this analogy all the time. When somebody asks you, tell me about yourself, I mean, how many times have you heard that question? And there is nobody in a better position to tell you, maybe except for your mother, to tell you to tell you about yourself or to tell them about yourself. Yet we gravitate to the same kinds of words. We even hem and haw. I know I struggle with it. I can't answer that question in any sort of meaningful way still. It takes reflection. It takes introspection. It takes time. But you got to do it. And if you don't do it, you're going to sound like everybody else out there. And those discerning job seekers who are looking for a hint of authenticity, who are looking for a hint of difference, who are looking for the things that they know will allow them to thrive, will see right through it. And so we got to get better at understanding what is. And enter the word authenticity. We're hearing it a lot more. We're seeing it a lot more. It's showing up in a number of places, and certainly not just related to recruiting. There's a lot of talk about the value and the power of authenticity in the realm of leadership. One of the reasons we think it's actually surfacing as a differentiator is because it's a hard one to figure out, because there aren't a lot of organizations that have really figured out how to do this yet. And so we hope that in the next 15, 20 minutes, we'll give you some things to help you get there. And as you do that, and just to kind of set the stage a little bit, here are kind of four things that should lay in the back of your mind as we continue this conversation. You got to start with that deeper understanding that I referred to earlier. If you're not able to get to the nit and the grit of what makes you you, you're never going to be able to be authentic about that. And so how you do that, what you do to assess it, to understand it, is an important task for the recruiting and the talent acquisition realm out there today. They may not feel like they're equipped to do that, but if your HR team or others in the organization can't give you that understanding, then work to drive the process by which you attain it, because it's the backbone to how you talk to your clients, i.e. your recruits. As you do that, and Jamie's going to talk more about this, but getting really crystal clear on what is. So what's really valued, what really drives your success, and what makes you distinct, that's where the magic lies in authenticity. If you can spend your time talking about those things, then you know that you're going to have the ear of those people that are going to be better fit for your organization. Figure out what's truly valued in your organization. Figure out what really drives your success. Get some language around that. Use your language, no one else's language, your language, and that'll be the jumping off point, the launch pad to how you start to share your message and your story. And that requires one final leap, and it's a tough one. But we all got to get more comfortable with transparency. And transparency doesn't mean that we get to throw or have to throw everything out there or all of our dirty laundry. Transparency is not about dirty laundry, but it's about sharing what's important, and it's about sharing what matters. It is definitely not about being all things to all people. The sooner we stop trying to send a message that we think people want to hear, the sooner we stop trying to portray ourselves as an organization that for whatever reason has been classified as, again, the ideal workplace or the best place to work, or if we're not doing X, Y, or Z, we can't possibly be competitive today. I say that that needs to change. Let's start figuring out again what drives our success, and let's be that to the people that we need, not to all people. You cannot be all things to all people. And share what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. That goes back to this first slide on the 18 different sources. There's a reason they're going to 18 different sources. If they heard what they wanted to hear, they'd stop after one. They're looking for the stuff that maybe they don't know. And the sooner we can give them that, the sooner they stop looking through those 18 sources. Let us control that message. Let us inform what it is that we want them to understand about our business. And that's really where transparency starts, and that's how transparency leads to authenticity. So the final thing that I'll say and then pass it over to Jamie is that we know, and this is, I mean, this evidence is surfacing again and again, but culture, and we're going to define a little bit more about what that means, is maybe becoming the most important factor when anybody starts to talk about their experience at work, and certainly when anybody starts to think about recommending their place of work to a friend. If that is in fact the case, then getting smart, so I'm trying to connect the dots here, getting smarter about our culture allows us to understand our business in a more intimate way, allows us to be more transparent with who we are, and allows us to be more authentic with the workforce that's increasingly investigating what they will likely get if they choose to associate with us. And so I'll leave it at that, and Jamie, hand it over to you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the setup. I'll add a little piece about culture and millennials, since that last statistic came from a millennial survey. This is from a different survey, but 77% of millennials, when they were interviewed, said culture is as or more important than pay and benefits. So it's not just about recommending it to friends. Like, this, it means a lot to what is going to be the largest, or I think currently now is the largest segment of the workforce. So it needs our attention, and it needs our attention, as you said, because you can't do the work of really being truly authentic unless you give culture enough attention internally. And I honestly still get pushback from people, from leaders on this, because they say, oh, culture is squishy, it's vague, it's hard to define, it's sort of how we do things here, but I can't really wrap my arms around it. And I agree culture has some complexity to it, but I don't think it's hard to define. And so I've with that in mind, I've been sharing as many times as I can my definition of culture that is up on the screen right now. Culture is the collection of words, actions, thoughts, and forgive the technical term here, stuff, that clarifies and reinforces what is truly valued inside an organization. So if you want to get clear about what your organization really is like, what it's like to work there, then you have to work on the words, actions, thoughts, and stuff piece of that. Like, that's where your culture lives. And it starts with the words. I put that up there intentionally first, because as human beings, we live our lives through story, and your organization has a story. When you interview people for a job, eventually they will say, so what's the culture like here? The answer that you give, the words you use to describe your culture, that's a critical piece of your culture. Some of that, you know, when managers tell their direct reports, here's how we do things here, when you lead people through new employee orientation, all the materials you give them, even your core value statement, which I'll talk about in a minute, and other cultural artifacts, you spend a lot of time coming up with words to say what your culture is. And I think we need to be a little more intentional about that, and actually try and describe it in ways that it matches what people experience, because that, of course, is the next part of the definition. Words are one thing. We all know that actions speak louder than words. And so, no, back, stay on the blue one. If you say that your culture, you know, really empowers their employees, we let them own their jobs and take initiative and run with things, and then you're walking down the hall and you talk to your direct report and you're like, hey, how's that project going? And they're like, oh, it's done. It's out. We sent it. The client has it. The website is live. Whatever it is, like, we're done. And if your instant reaction as a manager is like, ooh, did I get to see that? Who approved that? Like, that behavior just canceled all of those lovely words you've been describing your culture about, because people will remember the behavior. And the next time when you go to ask that employee, hey, how's the project, he's going to say, it's on your desk waiting for approval. And you just lost that engagement, right? You lost that initiative that you think you have in your culture because the behavior is not consistent. So words is one thing. Behavior, you have to make sure, aligns with your words. And then sometimes, I won't talk a lot about thoughts, but the thoughts means that, you know, the underlying assumptions you have about how people are and how they work together and what your business is about. Like, sometimes you have to unearth those deeper assumptions that you don't give voice to, in order, because again, it can sometimes be inconsistent with what you're saying it is over time. And then the stuff piece, I put that in there because, you know, words, actions, and thoughts, that's what the human beings in your organization are doing when they are creating and living your culture. Stuff just refers to the tangible things that also shape your culture. So your office location. Are you in the middle of the city? Are you in the suburbs? Are you urban, rural? Your office decor defines your culture because it clarifies what's valued. How do you have your desk set up? Is it a sea of gray cubicles? Is it everyone has their own office? Are you in a funky space with, you know, open tables where everyone's working together? All of that stuff clarifies and reinforces what's valued inside the organization. And that's the other piece that I just wanted to say about the definition. We think people say culture is just so, this is how we do things here. It's not how we do things here. It's about what is valued inside the organization. And I highlight the word valued with a D because it's not about values with an S. And if you've got a core value statement out there, like more power to you. But to be honest, most core value statements are sort of lowest common denominator, like stuff that everyone agrees on. I bet your core values have, you know, innovation or quality or integrity or honesty. And those are great, but I'm not sure that really drives behavior. I look at Enron. Enron had beautiful core values hung up in their lobby. And I'm sure with like integrity and honesty was there, but that's not what was valued there. Right? What was valued is you make your numbers. Even if you have to make a big accounting firm lie, you make your numbers. Now I wasn't part of Enron, so I don't know how they clarified that and reinforced that through their words, actions, and thoughts and stuff, but they did. And people knew it. Your organization, the people in your organization, they know your culture even if you can't name it because they know what's valued. Now, that being said, knowing what your culture is fine, but I don't want it just to be a culture. I want it to be a strong culture. And this Charlie mentioned this earlier. Particularly if you're trying to recruit the best talent, you need to be able to make it clear that your culture, what you value inside your culture, that is aligned very clearly with what drives the success of the enterprise. So a quick example from like the culture cool kid Zappos, they have a very decentralized culture. And they actually give a lot of power to their call center employees, and call center employees typically don't have a lot of power. They don't get to make a lot of decisions. They read scripts for the most part. I mean, they can't even decide exactly how to respond. It is told to them how they will respond. But at Zappos, they don't do that. They don't have the scripts, and they let their employees, their call center employees, upgrade your account. They'll make a decision to give you free shipping. They can even stay on the phone as long as they want. Which again is not a call center best practice. You're supposed to get them on the phone and off the phone quickly. It's more efficient. But in Zappos, they give the power to the employee. You stay on the phone with that customer as long as you think it's necessary. The record, by the way, is 11 hours for one call. It was not me. But the reason they do that is not because they read a book that said decentralization is cool. They do that because to be successful as an online retailer, particularly with selling shoes, you have to wow the customer. They do have a list of core values, and number one is delivering a wow experience to the customer. Like, it's not just good enough to have good customer service. They want people to hang up the phone and go, wow. And if you want that, if that drives your success, which is what they bet the farm on when they were growing back 10 years ago, then you have to create a culture that values the behavior that's going to let that happen. So you give power to the people who are on the phone with the customer. All right, so that's what you need to do inside your organization, is figure out what behaviors you need to get the success, and then create a culture that values that and align that. And then, again, make that clear through your words and your behaviors and your thoughts. All that has to be done. That, however, is where I get my next round of pushback from folks, which is, then we have to change the culture. And so they think, all right, well, I got this culture that we have now, and yeah, I realize I need to be more decentralized maybe to drive our success, so we get to do culture change. Then I get everyone talking about exactly what processes you'll use, what materials you'll do. Do we have to train our staff? What do the senior managers say? We focus on this process of culture change, and in doing so, we end up failing. Because what we're not paying attention to is the original pieces of this slide, which is current state and future state. We're not talking about what's it really like to work here? We're not talking about what is our culture, at a, as Charlie said earlier, at a granular level, okay? And if we would actually spend more time, you can go ahead, talking about the current state, talking about what our culture is, and really talking about, actually go to the next one too, really talking about what drives our success, what works. Like most organizations, they focus on the culture change, but they don't do the what is work, and they don't do the what works work. Okay? They don't actually define their culture in a way that their employees would say, yeah, that's actually what it's like here. And then they don't do the hard work, like I think that Zappos did in that one example, saying, you know what? It has to be about customer service. That actually, we have to value that more. And so if that's going to drive our success, then yeah, we need a culture where we can give more power to the people who are on the front lines. They also actually have, talking about authenticity, Charlie, they have as one of their core values that people are all a little weird and that's okay. They demand authenticity in the workplace, not because they read the Bill George article, but because that's going to give that wow experience when you talk to a real human being. Right, so they figured that out, built that into your culture. But if you don't do the what works and what is piece of this, then you're always going to be off in your culture change. And people blame the change process, and it's actually because they didn't do the hard work. Now, we, Charlie and I and our business partner, Maddie Grant, actually are developing an assessment that's going to get in a detailed way to that what is piece. Right, and so we have, and we're doing this with Question Pro. We're really excited about the partnership, but we've identified 8 actual culture markers. You need to actually get down and dirty and say, who are we as an organization around these things, agility, collaboration, growth, et cetera? Like, how transparent are we? And it's not just, oh, we're generally transparent or we love transparency. No, who shares information with whom, how frequently, what are the rules about whether the senior management team is actually going to release the notes to its meeting. Like, you have to get detailed in explaining what information do we share and why do we share it and how do we share it. And if you can name that and say, look, here's what it's really like to work here, that gets you back to the original point here, which is authenticity. Like, you can actually describe your organization in a clear way based on these kinds of markers. When you actually hire someone, 6 months later, they're going to say, that's it. You're right. That's exactly what I was promised, and this is what I'm getting. When you can do that, you can move to the last slide. When you do that, that's where you get the employee engagement, right? That's where you get that sort of discretionary effort from employees because they were delivered what they said was going to be delivered. And so they knew what they were getting into and they already voted, yeah, that's what I want. And when they experience it, then it's on, you've got people working on all 4 cylinders. So, Charlie, anything to add to wrap it up before we move to questions?
No, I think you did a really nice job, and I was just going to go back to this slide and maybe just make one observation, because there's a lot of stuff here, and you know there's certainly a lot to understand about our own workplaces. But if you bear in mind again that there are success factors, there are things that drive your success that are likely unique to you, even when compared to your competitors in the same industry. You know, it is likely that there are things, there are behaviors and actions that, and thoughts and beliefs that take place in your workplace that make you successful. It may not be all these things. It may be one or two of them. But finding out which of those things are important to bridge the gap into the recruiting conversation feeds then into the messaging that you're sharing and the kinds of people that you're looking for. Because if what drives your success is not important to the people that you're trying to hire, then you're hiring the wrong people. And so, again, it's about establishing that awareness and that understanding so that it can feed into everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I won't go into the whole story, by the way, but just as a quick example of that, one of the organizations that we profiled in the When Millennials Take Over book, they're so much about collaboration, and we'll explain their whole business model, but that's so important to them. When they hire people, they do a group interview, and they have the two candidates pair up and do something together. You're actually you're working with your competitor, and the folks that sort of want to be the smartest and show the right answer and don't collaborate, they don't make it to the next round. So you have it's a great example of when you get that clarity, then you build it into your recruiting process.
And that was the end of this excerpt. Thanks for joining us, and listen to the other two webinar excerpts in this series hosted by QuestionPro. And that was the Culture Chat today. We'll have some highlights up on the blog soon. Find out more about WorkXO and how to map your workplace genome at workxo.com.